but perhaps the location of life's origin is important to consider when we're trying to work out how it might have happened. This is the sound of an active hydrothermal vent. These are kind of cracks in our planet's surface where hot water plumes out. And some people think this is where the first life began, including Dr. Nick Lane from University College London.
Essentially, these vents are microporous labyrinths of interconnected pores. And the pores have got very thin inorganic walls around them. That's what the barrier is the walls around these pores. And the pores may be a few micrometers across, and perhaps just a micron thick, the barriers around it. So they're bigger than cells, but we're getting down to a cell-like size, and it has the same structure as cells. That's what's intriguing about it. You have essentially a pore with a barrier around it that's equivalent to the cell membrane and effectively a charge on that barrier. And so we have a kind of topology which is equivalent to cells.
Oh, right. And you think this kind of structure, the fact that it's similar to cells and it's got this barrier, like a cell would have a membrane, means that it's possible these were where life started?
That's my view. You would find lots of people who would sweep that aside.
Nick believes that we might be missing something when we run those simulations of how those first organic molecules were created, and that the missing piece of the puzzle is looking at how cells do it today, which is through using carbon dioxide and hydrogen powered by an electrical charge on their membranes. Primitive creatures called methanogens could provide a clue.
The simplest cells, like methanogens, for example, they live from carbon dioxide and hydrogen, so just gases. The kind of gases that just bubble out of the ground. In fact, hydrogen gas bubbles out of hydrothermal vents. They don't react easily, hydrogen and CO2. If they did, we could probably fix global warming by stripping CO2 out of the air, and we could fix the energy crisis by making synthetic gasoline. So I'm sure people have been looking at this behind closed doors for a long time. But this is what methanogens do. And to get them to react, they use some of the simplest, most ancient proteins that we know about, things like ferredoxin, which are iron sulfur proteins. And the cofactor that does the chemistry is, in fact, a mineral, a very small mineral made of iron and sulfur. And these are the kind of minerals that form spontaneously in the vents that we're interested in. And the other thing that the methanogens do is they use this electrical charge on the membrane, as well as these iron sulfur proteins, to drive the reaction between hydrogen and carbon dioxide. And that's what I think could happen spontaneously in the vents, because there's natural structures, barriers including these iron sulfide minerals, and natural proton gradients, so equivalent to the charge on the membrane. And so the prediction is that it ought to drive that reaction, and if it does, then we can look for organic molecules being formed that way.
So the hydrothermal vents provide us with a network of pores which are similar to cells, a natural charge on the barriers which could drive reactions, and they're rich in the chemicals which are used by all cells today to grow. So can we recreate this environment to look for these reactions?
We would love to do that. The issue, of course, is that these vents can be 60 metres tall. There can be, you know, today the few that we know about come in fields which can be kilometres square across. And we think 4 billion years ago that they could have spread all across the entire seafloor. And so the whole planet becomes a chemistry lab from that point of view. And there's millions of years to spare, and there's high pressures and high concentrations of hydrogen. So to try and do it in the lab is a joke, in the sense that we cannot possibly simulate very much of that. But what we can simulate is the structure. So in effect, what you have are barriers containing iron sulfur minerals, and those are semiconducting, which means electrons can pass across this barrier. And on one side we have a simulated alkaline hydrothermal fluids, the kind of things that we see in the vents today down at the bottom of the oceans. And on the other side, what we think would have been an acidic early ocean, mildly acidic, and maybe pH 6 or something, so only slightly acidic, with lots of carbon dioxide in it. And the idea is that that difference in pH, the difference in acidity, will help drive that reaction, transferring electrons across the barrier. And so that's the kind of experiment that's, you know, relatively easy, conceptually at least, to set up in the lab. The reality is that even very simple systems turn out to be more complex than you can really control.
Well, have you had any results yet?
It looks as if we are able to make simple organic molecules. And from those simple organic molecules, it's relatively easy to go on and produce more complex ones, like, for example, ribose or deoxyribose, which are the sugars used in DNA and RNA. There's so many steps that we're really probing the ones that seem easiest for us to do at any one time, rather than necessarily the most coherent set of rational steps. We're doing the ones that we can actually do. And so there's big gaps everywhere. And we're trying to repeat a lot of what we've already done. I suppose the normal skepticism, if you can't repeat everything with different people doing the same experiments, then you begin to worry that someone did it wrong, or there was something, some reason why it's not believable. You realize when you're looking for tiny amounts of trace substances that actually are found on everybody's breath, for example, you've got to be really careful. It's very easy to make a fool of yourself by thinking you've made something when it turns out that you didn't at all. It was just on someone's breath.
Eureka! Oh, wait a minute.
Exactly.